This is Canary in a Coal Mine, a Yellowbird podcast. The show about underrated, sometimes peculiar, but mostly well-meaning ways we keep safe in a risky world.
Hello and welcome back to Canary in a Coal Mine, a Yellowbird podcast. I'm your host, Michael Zhao. Joining us today is Kevin Rivera.
I know that you're the director of EHS and operations excellence at HUMA. And HUMA is a worldwide technology and biostimulant company for sustainable environmental, agriculture, and commercial applications. But you're in over 40 countries, and so that must add some very interesting dynamics as well. But if you wouldn't mind just give me a little of your background and all ears.
Yeah, so I'm Kevin Rivera. I'm a certified safety professional, and I've been working as a safety professional for a little over 14 years. If you've looked at my background, as you've seen, I've worked in a different number of industries ranging from aerospace to manufacturing, oil field technology, and mining. I mean, even currently in my role, I'm in chemical manufacturing. I've seen a large variety of how different organizations approach safety and the different theologies behind it, the different ways to manage safety systems in all these different industries. And so that's helped me as a professional be well-rounded and has given me a lot of good thoughts that I could share with you.
Love it. Yeah. In fact, I was looking at your LinkedIn. I did notice the MSHA credentials that you have, and taking you back 14 plus years, give me a little bit of an understanding of how you started on this journey. Like, how did you decide to go into, you know, EHS and safety in particular?
That's a great question. So I initially was going to go to medical school. That was my plan. I was going to be a doctor, become a cardiologist. I was really interested in medicine and healthcare. But while I was doing that, I was working as a security guard when I was a college student, doing EMT security work at a titanium plant. And that was my first big exposure to industrial and occupational safety processes. Well, you know, because I was the EMT, people get hurt, I'd go respond on site. So I was doing that while going to doing the prereqs for medical school. And I reported to the facility EHS manager. And he said, you know, you seem like a sharp guy. So he was giving me more and more safety related responsibilities over that period of time. So I was like, you know what, this actually seems like it could be really interesting as a career, because I hadn't even known that it was a possibility until that point. And then, so I did that, found out that it was a lot cheaper to do that than medical school. So I pivoted into that, found that I could get my undergrad in occupational health and safety, and went that route. And here I am today. Now, I have a more personal reasons for doing it as well that I'll share with you. My grandfather, he worked at a pipe fitting factory, and he was exposed to asbestos. The company knew about it, but they didn't do a lot to manage that risk. So he died of asbestos-related carcinoma, and it could have been prevented if they had a good safety program in place. And so I think about my grandfather, and I think about the difference that a good safety program or professional could have made in that setting, and he may still be alive today. So there's some personal and you know, variation as to why I became a safety professional.
It's so interesting you should say that, because I find as I have these conversations with people, most folks come into this environment with a heart-driven reason, that somebody that they loved or somebody that they love had been affected by this, or they were exposed to it in some way, and realizing that the resources available to most businesses are just not there. And so if you can be a difference maker, which you obviously chose to do, I mean, think about your background. You were an EMT, so you cared about humans. You also were going for medical, so you care about humans. And now you are an EHS professional, safety professional. Again, it's all human life driven. So I find this industry has such huge heart, which I love. It's one of the things I love most about what we do.
Like, I adds intrinsic value as to why I come to work every day, right? Yeah. It's just more than a paycheck, because it is helping humans.
Yes. It's funny. You know, Yellowbird, at the end of the day, we're doing what we do to keep people safe or help people put safety programs together. But you remember that why you're doing these things, a situation that you had to deal with, and you were a few moments behind schedule because you had somebody who had an injury, and you had to handle that as part of your job. Doing that well is such an important piece of what we do. I think it becomes commonplace where you don't realize that you're going to make a big difference in that person's world today. Because every time something like that happens where you prevent it, maybe you don't get the credit for the preventions. That's kind of the way it works.
There's a lot of safety professionals that'll say, you know, going into safety, it can feel thankless sometimes because they don't see all the barriers of protection or the defenses that you're putting in place. But, it's got to not matter to you to always look for that thank you and just think of the difference that you're making.
Absolutely. So you are in Gilbert, Arizona, and you're in 40 countries as a company. So what does that look like for you? Like
a lot of traveling.
Okay. Yep.
Traveling. I just got back from New Mexico. I was there all week last week.
What were you doing, if you can tell me?
Well, definitely. So part of the company I work for right now, we do fertilizer blending and packaging. You read biostimulants, people think, well, what is that? Well, it's fertilizer. It's just a fancy scientific way of saying it. In New Mexico, 70 million years ago, there was a rainforest there. And what we're doing out there is we are mining up the remnants of that rainforest and using it for fertilizer because it's decaying plant matter that was there. And it makes great fertilizer. But that's where we have mining operations. Mining operations has a lot of danger and things to it. And so I'm there kind of directing it. And a crown gem, I think, of this plant or what we're doing is we have the fastest processing humate plant in the world.
Wow, that is very impressive. You mentioned when you started in the journey that you had a facility safety manager that saw promise in you. And that's kind of how you started going down that path. Do you have facility safety management at every location that you guys operate as a full-time employee?
We don't. I wish that we did. We have like a facility in Mexico that only has like four employees there. And so we don't have an on-site safety presence. Right? But that's an example of somewhere we would have someone on my team travel to just to do a drop-in inspection and see how things are going. It's great though, working with a team, coordinating where people are going. I enjoy having peers. Yeah, it makes a big difference.
It does. How many people do you have on your team?
I have 10 people on my team.
Okay. I mean, that's a decent sized team, but you have a huge operation. So what do you how does it affect the safety culture?
So a big part to be successful, 10 can feel like a good sized team, but sometimes it can feel like it's not big enough, just depending on what's happening. I have a philosophy of driving employee safety with the frontline supervisors, because nobody has a bigger impact on company safety culture than that frontline supervisor that is with the teams that are doing the work, the boots on the ground every single day. Because a safety professional, if they're visiting multiple locations, they can only be there for a short period of time. And so a good sign of a good company safety culture is employees being actively engaged in the safety processes among themselves. The safety professional is more like a coach, right? Just stop by, see how you're doing.
So in that example, from a just resources perspective, now, do you do the international travel as well? Are you guys going? I mean, you're in these 40 countries. So do you have your 10 folks? Are they going to all these various places?
Yeah, just as needed. Now, something that we have here, we have a lot of automation in place. Mm-hmm. So if we don't have boots on, if we don't have boots on the ground somewhere, then obviously we're just sending mechanics somewhere versus a safety professional.
Right. So how do you budget the process of running these safety programs? Like if somebody says, okay, well, I'm going to have to go to New Mexico, there's always the raw cost of the salary, but how do you figure out how to budget the travel and per diems and meals and entertainment and like all the things that you have to, all the other expenses? Like, how does that work?
So the biggest thing is the budget, when I create it or when we sit down as a team and go over it, we look at first, the core business operations, what has the highest risk if someone's going to get hurt, where do we need our safety professionals to be? Because we don't want to travel unnecessarily, right? So wherever we have the highest risk, like mining operations in New Mexico, right, we'll allocate more money for that, right? And then we just, now we have the luxury of looking at like how much we've traveled historically, right? And then we're able to forecast budgets going forward of how to spend. And then injury history, right? If I have one region where we've seen a spike in injuries, then I'm going to allocate more money for traveling to that region to check it out, to offer those operation themed supports. You know, if somebody's covering all of South America, that might be a bigger region than someone that's just covering the Northeastern US.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
So what I do is I have my managers, I have them build out a budget.
Mm-hmm.
Then they send in the proposal, and then I cut it in half and tell them we're not
doing that. Good company, man. I like that.
Right. but yeah, more or less, it's a risk-based analysis, looking at injury history, looking at future operation scaling, and then determining, it's really a guess, right? It's a ballpark guess of what we think it'll cost.
It is. Now, what about, like, I was going to ask you, so many people in so many different areas for training and making sure people are, you know, heavy equipment training or lockout tag out or arc flash or whatever the given risk is, do you guys run that training internally? Like, or are you finding localized or national or international resources?
So luckily, we are able to run the training internally. I've built out a EHS training matrix.
Okay.
So basically every position and what is required training for that position, and then the frequency of when that position needs renewal, like forklift operator training has to be done every 3 years, right?
Per operator.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The problem. They turn over a ton. That's the challenge. It's not actually the, go ahead.
And so my team runs training, but a lot of that too is also driven with the frontline supervisors. And so if I have a frontline supervisor that can be a forklift certified trainer,
right,
we'll send them to a train the trainer course, and then they can do that training for their people.
Got it.
And not a lot of companies have that luxury that they'll, you know, or even know that they should invest that much into a safety program. And that's where Yellowbird is great, because they can use Yellowbird as a resource to do that. And I think that there's a lot of value in it that people are still catching on and seeing. And you'll see that as your business scales. And you've probably seen a lot of that already, where it's just like, hey, we probably should bring this in-house. I don't know why we haven't done it yet. You know?
Right. Well, it's interesting because our model, and you've recognized this, is that there's 200 plus variances in expertise in safety. Every one of those has a different impact and would take a different type of trainer to be able to do that. And so I find it to be fascinating how many folks will, who not realize that you can't have one person responsible for everything for all employees at a single location. It's like, oh, I have a doctor. Well, yeah, but you should probably go to an oncologist if you have cancer, right? Like, it's like, no, I got my GP's fine. You know,
if you have one guy, right? You have what we call key man risk or key person risk.
Right.
And it's not sustainable, right? If you're going to scale an organization, you need to scale like your safety program or other programs with that.
Yeah. When you've been through other companies, you have a safety culture, which is fantastic. You're developing these programs. How are you consistently justifying the expense with your management, with your leadership? Obviously you cut it in half. And so that tells me that somebody's asking you to keep your budget under control. So how are you doing that?
In the United States, we have OSHA, and OSHA has a great resource that you may have heard of called Safety Pays. And so if you go on the OSHA website and you go to Safety Pays, you can put in any type of injury based off of the industry. You put in your NACIS code.
Uh-huh.
And so you put that information in, and you can get the average workers' compensation costs for that type of injury. So in that industry, right? And then so you can forecast basically how much a company could potentially spend on injuries or problems related to that. And then you can say, look, we could save X amount of dollars by investing X amount of dollars. Because a good safety program is not reactionary. It's it's defenses.
Yes.
Right. And that's what Yellowbird does, right? They help companies implement defenses.
Yes.
That $1,200 flat rate that someone spends, it's like, that's a you're saving thousands potentially off the $1,200 or tens of thousands, you know? So it's a good defense that you build into place, but I use Safety Pays for presentations.
And that's a PAYS.
Yeah. PAYS. Yeah, Safety Pays.
Huh. Interesting. I honestly know a lot of resources. I don't think I've even seen that one. So thank you. We are all about justifying the expense for good, not, oh, you have to because of regulation or you have to because of the law. Yes, that's true. But like I mentioned, high turnover is, everybody goes, oh, forklift only has to be done every 3 years. Yes, but forklift operators generally cycle through every 90 to 120 days. So
that's correct.
If you caught that cycle at the end of the 3 years and you got everybody trained up and somebody joined and they're the ones who are getting hurt, they're the ones who are being injured.
So if we took that example of Safety Pays, right, you look at the cost of training a forklift operator and then compare that to the cost of forklift injuries.
Yep.
And the training is way cheaper.
Right. It's so true. My philosophy and Yellowbird's philosophy is we never want to displace internal safety people. I don't think that's the right thing to do ever, but you want to have them reinforcing the culture and reinforcing the best practices and keeping everybody accountable to the process. But you don't want people flying around doing all this stuff that's tactical when you can do it from above as air traffic control.
So I think for me personally, I love seeing different operations and helping them see through the eyes of safety, right? The different ways that they could approach a risk. And that's fun. The variety is fun. It versus going, you know, I work at Huma, right? So I'm here helping them with their problems every single day, but I have the advantage of working a 4-day work week here. And so on Fridays, I've been helping out with Yellowbird. And so that's kind of nice, because if a job comes up where I can be of assistance, right, they're getting a director level experienced person that they normally would have no way to be able to afford my rate, but they're getting it at the Yellowbird rate and they're getting that expertise for a killer deal. And that's good for that client side. And that's something maybe you could highlight to them.
You know what? We need to do a better job at that. You're right.
You know, I think a good thing that you do is when you look for certified safety professionals, right? Or you look for these people that have these credentials, you know, that adds a lot of weight and takes a lot of that vetting process, at least up to a point, out of there, right? If you get a guy, anyone could call themselves a safety professional and say, hey, you know, I was the safety professional because they told me to do safety stuff. But it's like, you know, there's a certain standard of quality you get with credentialed professionals.
There is. And not only the credentials and licenses and all the regulations, but there's also one of the things that we're doing that most organizations, people try to call us a staffing company or a placement firm every now and then. And I always try to explain that we actually use relevant background history to match people, not just certifications. So as an example, if I were looking at your background, which, you know, you have certifications that you acquired when you were in a past employment. And so if I were to have a job that was in a mine, as an example, well, you actually have an MSHA, and we talked about that, where you may not even be necessarily using it today, but you did that for 8 years or whatever period of time you did that for. And so you would be better qualified to go out to a mine than say somebody who just happened to be down the street says, yeah, I'm a safety guy. Right. So that's the kind of stuff that we really have to learn to highlight better. So as we wrap up, you know, I first thank you again so much for being a Yellowbird pro and also for, you know, telling us your story. If there's any guidelines or word of advice for people who are looking to consult or looking to be a Yellowbird pro, do you have any insights that you want to give them?
Yeah. So if I were to kind of summarize, with Yellowbird, you can get expertise that you may not normally be able to afford in that situation that I gave an example of, like myself. Another thing is, because of the expertise of that person that could be specific, that matching specific, I think people just more and more will start to realize the value that brings, because it's huge, you know? So it's a great platform. I have shared it with other people. I've encouraged other companies that look into it, that I've seen smaller companies, and I've had friends that run smaller outfits, and they say, hey, you know, can you help out with this? Or could you look this over and write up a program for me? And I, and if they reach out enough times, I say, you know, there's a platform that's really good for that. And have a little bird.
Love it. Well, thank you so much, Kevin. And I look forward to doing more business with you and seeing that you have, nobody can see this online, but seeing that you have a beautiful golf course behind you in your picture, I look forward to eventually getting you out on the golf course and thanking you again in person for doing this.
Yeah, it was great to be on here today. Thank you.
Yellowbird supports intelligence and compliance solutions at scale through its EHS tech platform. Learn more at goyellowbird.com to get started for free.